Hey everybody, me again, doing another Flickers of Fear movie review. And this is another one that I watched quite a while ago. I think it was in 2017, and I really, really dug it. And so I wanted to rewatch it and do it again for this show, as I've been doing the last couple of weeks. Now, this is the Netflix film, I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. Now, I'm going to say right out front, this movie, like most movies, I guess, but this one really is not for everybody. This is a very, very slow, very atmospheric, not very plot heavy. It's very ambiguous. It's a little bit literary. So I kind of feel like if that is immediately going to turn you off, because I do feel like there's kind of wildly divergent critic analyses of this, where it's kind of like some people just think it's this great atmospheric mood piece, and some people are just like, it's boring, pretentious crap. So I really liked this, but I can totally see how some people might not. So this is like not your cup of tea. This is very much like a creepy visual poem, I guess, more than a traditional narrative. It does have a plot, it does have things happen in it, but it's pretty much mainly focused around mood and atmosphere and character to a lesser extent. So, as I said, if that doesn't sound like something that you'd be into, then absolutely I do not recommend it, because you will just probably roll your eyes and like turn it off. But I really, really liked this. So, this movie was actually the second feature film made by Osgood Oz Perkins, who is the son of Anthony Perkins. Now, interestingly though, the first feature film he made, which was The Black Coat's Daughter, which is also terrific, and I'm gonna review that one at some point as well. I saw that a couple years back. But for whatever reason, I guess Black Coat's Daughter got picked up by A24, but they didn't release it until after Netflix had already picked up I Am the Pretty Thing and put it on their service. So it's been on Netflix since a couple days before Halloween 2016, and it's still on there because it's they bought it, I assume. So it's kind of like tagged as a Netflix original movie. And as I said, if you're really into like atmospheric, slow burn, creepy kind of shit, because there is like some creepy visuals in this, then I recommend it if you have Netflix. However, on this review, I'm probably going to spoil some shit. Although, I don't know. This movie, it's almost kind of like, because it's not super plot centric, I feel like it doesn't really matter, like, if you spoil it or not, because it raises so many questions of like ambiguity. And so I think that, you know, to discuss it properly, you kind of have to be able to say like things that happen in it, and, you know, maybe bounce ideas off one another about what it all meant, because there's a lot of different meanings that you could take from this, and I'm not entirely sure like which one I subscribe to. Maybe I'll come up with something like the more I talk about it. So yeah, as I said, this came out in 2016. Now, the setup of this is that there's a live-in nurse named Lily Saylor. She's like a hospice nurse. She's played by Ruth Wilson, who I wasn't aware, actually. I know she's been in a bunch of other shit, but I didn't actually know she was a British actress, which she plays an American in this because it's set in Massachusetts. So I would never have realized that. So there you go. I don't know why like British actors doing American accents, they seem to be able to do it like a lot better than the reverse. And I'm not really entirely sure why that is, but that's neither here nor there. So yeah, so she plays a hospice nurse named Lily, and she has been hired to go to this creepy old house in, it's not really a creepy old house, actually. It's interesting, like, the way it's from. I'll get into that in a little bit. But it's this house in Braintree, Massachusetts. It's a little bit remote. And the house is the residence of a woman named Iris Blum. Now, Iris Blum used to be a very well-known writer of horror novels, suspense novels, crime novels, stuff like that. She's actually played by Paula Prentice, who I remembered very fondly from The Stepford Wives back in the 70s. Apparently, this was her first like major role in films in like 30 years, because I guess she was like a family friend of the Perkins family, and she said she would do it. So she plays the elderly Iris Blum, who seems to be suffering from dementia, and she can't really move around, and she's dying. So they have, you know, this nurse come in to live with her and take care of her. Now, the only other character, well, there's two other characters, but one of them, I'm not sure if they're real or not. So the only other character really in this that's, you know, as a person is Mr. Waxcap, who is kind of like, I guess he oversees like Iris Blum's estate. He's played by Bob Balaban, who's been in shit tons of movies. If you see, even if you don't know his name, if you see his face, you'll be like, oh, that guy, he's one of those actors. So he's only in a couple scenes as well. But that's he's kind of the one that sets everything up. And then there's also another character named Polly Parsons. But as I said, we're not really sure if this is really a real person or not. So when Lily moves in, we kind of establish, she pretty much establishes there's like a lot of voiceover narration in this, which normally is kind of like annoying, but I kind of liked it in this one because I thought it would, it just gave it this really creepy, I mean, this is a really eerie movie, but you have to kind of let yourself get immersed in it because the way that it's shot, like the cinematography, it just reminded me a lot of, I saw a really great review of this where somebody, and I can't remember who it was, but I'm paraphrasing what they said, but they said this is basically like the best adaptation of a Shirley Jackson novel that never existed. You know what I mean? So, and I definitely think that was deliberate because there are a couple scenes toward the end of the movie where they show Iris Blum as a young woman, like in her office in the house writing, and she looks very much like Shirley Jackson. So I think that they were trying to, I think that Oz Perkins was trying to evoke that because this is a very, very Shirley Jackson-y type of story. Also has some kind of like, in the cinematography, it almost kind of like evokes, you know, Kubrick maybe, or, you know, maybe David Lynch, because a lot of the stuff, and I think I brought this up too when we were talking about Hereditary, is that a lot of the shots, the way they're framed, it's like they'll do these really, really long kind of floating shots like of the house, and there's always these kind of like, and the house itself is actually quite bright and well lit, and it's, you know, all these pretty like whites and neutral colors and things, so it's not like a creepy decrepit old haunted mansion or anything, it's actually quite, you know, sunlit. But when he shoots certain things, and he shoots like, he'll shoot like a really dark doorway, and it's almost kind of like the way that it's shot, so it's kind of like almost evoking, it's like maybe there's something in those shadows, and there's not usually, at least as far as I could see, but just the way that it makes you feel, it's just this kind of patina of dread that kind of goes through this whole, because you're not really entirely sure what the fuck is going on in this house, and particularly the way it's shot, I really, really liked, and like I said, I think this is maybe why some people just thought it was like pretentious, boring crap or whatever, because there are like some really long shots of just like empty rooms with like an empty chair and things like that. But to me, that really seemed to, it made it like this really poetic, atmospheric. It's, I don't know. This movie just like really, really creeped me the fuck out. Also, I really liked, you know, because the very beginning, they have that really great shot of, you know, the ghost, who's supposedly Polly Parsons, and she's just kind of moving very slowly across this black background, and she's very kind of blurry, and it's like, and it's just like really, really great, like creepy, creepy imagery like that. But as I said, you really have to kind of like immerse yourself in it. Otherwise, you'll just be like, why are they showing a 3-minute shot of an empty chair? I don't know. It worked for me, and but I know it won't work for a lot of people. So Lily moves into this house. And she pretty much says in her opening narration that she's going to die. So you know that she's going to die by the end of the movie because she pretty much sets it up. Basically what she says is, you know, I'm 3 days away from my 28th birthday. I will never have a 29th birthday. So you know that she's going to die at some point in the film. So that's not really a spoiler because they tell you right away. Now they establish that she's kind of like, I'm not really sure entirely like when this movie was supposed to be set. I get it doesn't really matter, but I think it was interesting that he kind of took the route of not really specifying what year this was, because when she comes to the house, I mean, there's no cell phones. There's no, you know, the phone is still one that's mounted on the wall. Iris Blum listens to music like on a cassette tape. And the way that Lily dresses could kind of be like nerdy 80s or maybe not. Like it could be like nowadays hipster. Like maybe all of this old stuff is in Iris's house because she's old. But I think it's interesting how they kind of have this, so it almost has this sort of like unstuck in time quality, because you're not entirely sure like when this is set. Like, even I think the cars look kind of older, like when they show, there's brief shots of, you know, Mr. Waxcap arriving, and I think his car is kind of old. So I was assuming this was the 80s, but they don't ever tell you that outright. So Lily's character, they kind of established from the beginning that she's like a big scaredy cat. So, because Iris has all of these copies of her novels, like in the library, and she's kind of wants to read them, but she's really, really too scared to read them. And as she stays at this house, she starts to become convinced that probably this house is haunted. At first, it doesn't seem like much. It just seems like these kind of weird thumping noises. And at one point, she's talking to her friend on the phone, which is really the only time that she seems to be talking to somebody like outside of this situation. And you don't really know. I assume she's talking to a friend or a roommate or something like that. And all we find out about her past life, other than her being a big scaredy cat who can't even read horror novels or she won't be able to sleep, is that she was engaged to someone and it didn't work out. We don't know if that was her fault or his fault, or we don't know anything more about that. So like everything is just real, just it's all suggestion. She doesn't have a backstory filled in. Iris doesn't really have that much of a backstory filled in, other than she was, you know, quite a well-known writer back in her day, and that's pretty much it. So everything is just kept very, very vague, very ambiguous. So you can kind of bring your own interpretations to it, I guess. So at this one point, when it's nighttime, which is kind of like the first or second night, I think it's the first night she gets there, and she's talking to her friend on the phone, and she's talking about, yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of creepy. I'm always creeped out, like my first night in a new house or whatever. And at some point, like the phone sort of like snatches out of her hand, and she kind of like freaks out, but then she's like, oh, maybe I just dropped it, or, you know, maybe I had a spasm or something like that. But it's just like real, real slow shit like that. Now, at some point, she's actually at the house over a period of 11 months, like caring for Iris. Now, interestingly, Iris insists on calling her Polly, even though she corrects her a lot of times. Hey, my name is Lily. I'm your hospice nurse, blah, blah, blah. But she basically calls her Polly. So when Mr. Waxcap comes one day, like to check up on stuff, you know, she's like, well, who's Polly? Because she keeps calling me that. And he's like, she doesn't know anyone named Polly. She's like, the only Polly I can think of was a character in one of her books. So it was called The Lady in the Walls. So Lily goes and finds a copy of the Lady in the Walls. And as I said, she kind of like reads the first part and then she's like, oh shit, that's going to be too scary. I can't read it. But indeed, the character in The Lady in the Walls is named Polly Parsons. And apparently, according to the book, Iris moved into this house, which had been built, I think, in 1813. And the story behind the house was that there was a woman named Polly Parsons, and she got married, and her husband built the house for her. And then after they got married, they moved into it, and they were only there one day, and then they both disappeared. And Iris's story, when she wrote this book, was that basically the ghost of Polly Parsons told her the story that she was laying down this book. So she's saying, oh, this isn't a fictional book. This is something that the ghost that lives in this house told me. So as Lily starts reading this book, The Lady in the Walls, she starts seeing, or we start seeing, manifestations of Polly, you know, who she's just this beautiful, like blonde girl with like, you know, the 1813, she had a wedding dress on. And there's like some really creepy, visuals of her where she's kind of like where her, and I think one of the posters for the movie like showed it like this, where like her top half is facing this way and like her bottom half is facing that way. So she always kind of like walks like in that weird way, which I don't know, that like always freaks me out for some reason. But so there's that kind of stuff. And then as it goes on, there's some flashbacks where you supposedly discover that Polly was murdered by her husband, who for whatever reason, as soon as they moved into the house, bashed her on the back of the head with a hammer and then hid her in the walls, like behind there's kind of like some paneling there, and that she's hid back there. Now, interestingly, in the present day, if indeed that's what it is, there's kind of like this weird, it looks like mold or something, and it's kind of growing on the wall, like where you find out later Polly Parsons was maybe murdered and put behind that wall. So, and it's interesting too, because later on, as Lily starts to kind of investigate if this was actually a real case or not, she finds a box like in a closet that says Polly on it, and it has like the same kind of mold. And she finds in there, it's like a booklet that Iris had, you're led to believe, had like been dictated the story, like from the ghost. And it was like all handwritten and stuff. And that's where like the first draft of the book came from. So it's really weird because you're never entirely sure, because like I said, there's kind of a lot of theme in here of, you know, Lily saying that she's going to die. So you're presuming that her narration is coming from after she's dead. So Lily herself is a ghost now as well. So there's all kind of stuff that she says in the narration about that the living can never truly like live in a house. They can only borrow it from the dead. There's a lot of stuff in there about the dead not knowing that they're dead, like thinking they're still alive. So there's a lot of stuff about rot. Like she hears like voice, which is presumably Polly, or it could be her, we don't really know, talking about rot and about beauty and beauty rotting and things like that. So there's that kind of stuff. And she does have one really creepy kind of visual hallucination where the mold is like all over her arms, and then her arms go all like bloated, like she's dead already. So it's interesting because it's never really established whether Lily is Polly, whether Polly was actually a real person who was murdered in the house and was indeed a ghost, which seems to be kind of like that's what the through line is. But the way that they frame it and the way it goes along, I kind of lean more toward the theory that Lily was the ghost all along. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if that's the intention. Maybe he just like left it ambiguous so people could, like I said, bring their own interpretations. I interpreted it as the whole story about Polly Parsons and about her being murdered and walled up in the house. I kind of thought that maybe that was actually just a story that Iris Blum had written, but she said it was true. Like it was like a found footage type shit. Like, so, you know, so she said it was a true story. So there wasn't really a ghost in the house. But then when Lily came to the house, hearing about the story, reading the story, and kind of, you know, there's little ambiguous thumps and mold and stuff on the walls, and she's kind of constructing this whole entire story about it. So it's like she almost makes the ghost in her mind, because like I said, they do establish that she's a big scaredy cat. So she kind of makes this whole haunting up in her mind, which in the end ends up killing her because she dies of fright. Basically, she hears weird noises, she comes downstairs, and she sees that all the boards have been pulled off the wall, like where the mold had been. And then she sees, she turns around and she sees the apparition of Polly, like in her eye, and it, you know, shocks her and she has a heart attack and dies, after which Iris also subsequently dies because she doesn't have anyone to take care of her now. So at the end, they show them like taking both of the bodies away. So Lily is a real person and she's really dead. And the fact that she's having like narration over this movie leads me to believe that she is now the one haunting this house. And then they kind of show that like a family moves in subsequently with a couple of kids, and like just the way it's shot makes it seem like now she's the ghost watching it. But like I said, I don't really know if Polly Parsons was an actual person and an actual ghost, or if she was just like a manifestation of Lily's fear and she invented the ghost that ended up killing her in the end, and ironically making her be the ghost that haunts the house now. So it's kind of like I said, it's a very layered kind of piece, and I love that kind of stuff. Like it's very, very Shirley Jackson. It just reminded me very much of a Shirley Jackson novel. And in a way, it's almost kind of like, I've heard a lot of people call it literary, which it definitely is. It's almost kind of like a novel or like a creepy poem in movie form. You know what I mean? So if that really doesn't sound like your bag, then I would not recommend it, because like I said, it's not a long movie. I think it's only, you know, 87 minutes, something like that. But there's a lot of like really establishing like creepy kind of scenes. It's very, very low key. It's, you know, it's very much like that. I think Oz Perkins, like after this one, he actually made Gretel and Hansel, which came out a couple years ago, which I liked as well. Tom didn't like it, but I don't think Tom would like this movie either. He hasn't seen this one. But, you know, he just seems, Oz Perkins seems very, very into just these kind of like really eerie mood pieces that are, you know, not really all that plot heavy, like, or plot centric. He's just more interested, it seems like, in establishing an atmosphere and leaving things to the viewer's imagination, leaving things to multiple interpretations. And like I said, I usually really like that kind of stuff if it's done really well. And I think in the case of this movie, I think it actually was done really well, because this movie, like I said, some of the imagery in it, like the ghost imagery and stuff, like creeped me the fuck out. And I just really, really liked the whole mood of it. It was just like so, so great. But I definitely recommend, if you're going to watch it, if it sounds cool to you, then kind of turn all the lights out and watch it, and like don't have any other noise or anything distracting or anything like that, because this is one you really, really need to get completely invested in, get completely immersed in, and just kind of let it do its thing. And I think if you do that, like, you'll find that it's like really, really creepy and really eerie. And I really dug it a lot. So like I said, it's still on Netflix as far as this recording, because I just watched it yesterday on there. Because it's their movie, so I'm assuming it's not going anywhere. So yeah, definitely check it out if that sounds like your kind of thing. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.